everybody knows that while Christmas is for everybody, it's especially for children. After all, Christmas is the reminder of the birth of the most wonderful baby in the world, when God himself became a baby to visit us. So this morning, as we draw near Christmas, I'm going to speak to the boys and girls. Perhaps their dads and mums may listen too, but especially for the boys and girls. Jesus was a great storyteller. And if he could speak to you today, himself, I think he'd tell you some stories. For example, there's that story of the poor little street girl who was taken sick on Christmas and carried to a hospital. While there, she heard the story of Jesus coming into the world to save us. And one day she whispered to the nurse, "I'm having real good times here. Ever such good times. Suppose I'll have to go away from here soon as I get well, but I'll take the good time along, some of it anyway." "Did you know about Jesus being born?" she said to the nurse. "Yes," replied the nurse, "I know." "Shh, don't talk anymore." And the little girl answered, "You did? I thought you looked as if you didn't, and I was going to tell you." "Why, how did I look?" asked the nurse, forgetting her own order in her curiosity. "Oh, just like most folks, kind of glum." "I shouldn't think you'd ever look glum if you knew about Jesus being born." Long, long ago, there was a rough mining camp not many miles away from right at this spot where I'm speaking to you. It was a very rough place. But a little baby boy was born one day who changed everything. The mother, known as Cherokee Sal, so Bret Hart tells us, had been a very rough woman. But she died. And because there was no other woman in the camp, the rough gold diggers found themselves in possession of this little helpless infant that didn't have a mother or a father. They wrapped him up in some cloth that was available and placed him in a candle box. Now and again they'd come and look in upon the sun-kissed face of the baby. But somehow or other it didn't seem right to them that he should be clothed in rags, and they sent a distance of 40 miles in order to get him the best clothes that money could buy. Soon he was dressed in the most beautiful of baby garments. Then they looked at the candle box, and they said among themselves, "That's not much of a cradle for a little baby dressed like that." So they sent for a cradle, one made of polished rosewood, the best that could be supplied, and the little fellow was laid in there. But that cradle showed up the rest of the furniture and the dirty room in this rough camp. One of the men said, "What about that table nearby? It could do with a scrub, lads. And the floor's dirty. Let's get down and clean the place up a bit. And perhaps we ought to put some paper on the wall." So the place was cleaned and the walls were papered. After a while, they decided to take the cradle out onto the veranda. And someone looking around said, "Be good to have a bit of a garden round here with a few flowers. The baby might like that." Moreover, when the men came in to look at the little baby, they took off their hats. And the rough, coarse language of that camp just didn't seem right in the presence of that little child. And so the swearing stopped. Before long, the whole atmosphere of that camp was changed for the better. The men began to shave, to wash their clothes, to learn to speak softly. Well, that's a parable, isn't it? But 2,000 years ago, there came into this rough world a gift from God, a little baby boy. He grew up to be a man, and one day in the temple he said, "I am the light of the world. He that followeth me shall not walk in darkness." And he's been changing the lives of men all down the centuries. And boys and girls, he wants to change us. And that's what Christmas is all about. A God who so loved that he gave his only begotten Son, that we might become loving and kind, just like him. It's not easy. There was once a little boy who had to learn that. You know the text that says, being warned of God in a dream, that's Matthew 2:22. Let me tell you of a little boy who one Christmas time was warned of God in a dream. His mother had taken him up through the foggy streets to a wonderful place of toys, gleaming with many lights and coloured lanterns. And standing in the middle of it all was a great figure of Father Christmas. The air was full of an unceasing ticking from countless clockwork toys. And when you came out of the fog into the light, you were at a loss with all the multitude of toys. But after a while you began to see things clearly. Here was a table covered with weird Japanese beasts with waggly heads, which they shook amiably and everlastingly, so that unless you moved away, your own neck began to feel loose, and your old head began to waggle sideways and crossways, and always in sympathy. And then there were model soldiers of all sorts. There were Highlanders, cavalrymen, and they were doing drilling and shooting and scouting, everything that a proper soldier ought to do. And then there was a motor there that ran round its circle continually, and railway trains of the best with tunnels, signals, switches, stations. And there was a clever collision train that flew to pieces at a certain point in a terrible fashion. And there were battleships and torpedo boats and submarines and admirals waiting to board them. Further on, there were a lot of funny men whom you blew up, and then they smiled and stuck out their arms and held up their heads. Then when you let the wind out, they lost their smile and wailed mournfully and died drooping their heads into a sorrowful sigh. But they were always ready to smile and sigh and die again whenever you blew them up. There were butterflies which flew just as in life, strange shiny beetles, and the end of strings that everlastingly waggled their legs. All sorts of things. For girls there were dolls innumerable, great black gollywogs that never combed their hair. There was long thin policemen with skinny legs. So many things. I couldn't tell you about them all. It was a wonderful place. But here's the point. There was one sad thing about it. And that was to see, as you came out, little grimy fingers that pointed in and noses flattened like limpets on the glass. The toyless children whose only Merry Christmas was to look at the toys from outside and wish for them. But our little boy, the one we're talking about, he just looked hastily at these toyless children. He may even have thought they were nasty children. And he hurried home with his mother. Then came Christmas, a Merry Christmas. He was up ever so early, and his stocking was full, and after dinner he was full. He thought Christmas was a very happy time. But his mother had thought of the toyless children, and she said to him, "Wouldn't it be nice to send some of your old last year's toys to some poor children and give them some happiness? There's that clockwork engine of yours. It's quite good. You never play with it now." But he didn't like this at all. He didn't see why he should give up his toys away to poor children. He was going to play with that engine. He was certain of it. So his mother said no more. He went up to his toy room with a sort of uncomfortable feeling. It was partly because of the big Christmas dinner he'd eaten. He was stuffed. It was partly conscience. He curled himself up in a big chair with a new picture book, which he'd gotten that morning, and soon the book fell on one side and he was fast asleep. The little boy woke from his sleep with a start. It was exactly tea time. And by some strange instinct, which no one can explain, but which never makes a mistake, no boy has ever slept past any meal time. Well, not often anyway. He was quiet, but busy at supper time. And afterwards he told his mother that she might send his clockwork engine and several of his last year's toys to the children she'd spoken about. His mother wondered what had made him change his mind. But being a wise mother, she didn't ask. She knew that if she went on loving him, the secret would be told of its own account. At bedtime, and so it was. After many games, it was a pair of very tired legs that climbed the stairs, and a heavy little head that flopped down on the pillow. But before he slept, he had to tell what he'd dreamed in the afternoon, when he was asleep in his toy room, full of dinner. He dreamed he was in a great place of light, and he saw a company of shining ones, which he knew about from the pictures in the Pilgrim's Progress, to be really and truly angels. And they were busy making a splendid crown, and they told him it was for their master, Jesus Christ. A great heap of all sorts of things lay to their hand, and such strange things too. Cups of cold water, kind words, true words, gentle words, letters written to cheer sorrowful folk, old toys, brave deeds, quiet prayers, all manner of things. And each, as these cunning workmen took it and wrought on it, became a gleaming gem of rare colour and exquisite beauty. Then as he looked, he noticed an empty setting. Asked what they were going to put there. Ah, they said, the master sent us word of a fine jewel he expected to come through a little boy to whom he had given many things. It was to be made out of a clockwork engine, but it hasn't come yet. We don't know his name, but the master does. And if it doesn't come, he said, will the place be left empty? It will. But the crown will be spoiled. Yes, the crown will not be perfect. Do you think it'll come? They said. And he said softly, I think it will come. And then he awoke, and lo, it was a dream. That's the story the mother heard in the bedroom with the lights turned down. After a little while he said, Mummy, I did want the engine, but I couldn't bear to think of the crown being left like that. Do you think the jewel has come, or was it only a dream? The mother said, I think it was God in my little boy's conscience telling him to be kind. And I think the empty place and the crown will be filled now. Good night. And so the little boy learned what's good for everyone to learn, grown-ups and those who are not grown-ups, that the crown which Christ will rejoice to wear is set with the kindness of children. And now, boys and girls, I have the best story of all to tell you. That is, the best story that we can find outside the Bible. For I'm forever telling stories from the Bible, but I have some parables for you today. I want to tell you the real meaning of Christmas. Christmas is God's way of loving us. Right from that first Christmas at Bethlehem, God wanted to change us by convincing us that he was love. John 3:16, you know, that's the best verse in the Bible. It's a Christmas verse. It tells about Bethlehem. God so loved the world that he gave his son. Now, boys and girls, I want to tell you the greatest secret of living. Your daddies and mummies have heard me say it many times. Whatever gets your attention gets you. And God has been loving and kind in giving his son in order to get our attention, that he might have us and make us like himself, kind and true and pure. Let me tell you a story about that. First of all, here's a scripture text. Walk in the Spirit and you'll not fulfill the evil desires of the flesh. In the world of long ago, men used to tell of the rocks of the Sirens, a terrible danger that threatened sailors. There was a certain narrow strait which called for careful steering, where at the narrowest part there was a cluster of jagged rocks, which would soon shatter any ship that might be swept among them. But it was not these rocks alone that made the danger. It was the sirens who sat and sang upon them. Who were they? They were women, to all appearance most beautiful, but their minds were full of murder and theft. They sang their sweetest and they looked their loveliest when a ship came by. So the sailors left their rowing and forgot their steering, dazzled by their beauty, bewitched by their singing, and suffered their ship to be swept onto the rocks, where it soon lay a broken wreck, and the bodies of its drowned sailors fell a prey to the cruel sirens. One day there came sailing that way Ulysses, the great hero. Men often called him the crafty Ulysses of many devices. He wanted to hear the singers and to avoid having a shipwrecked. So he stopped the ears of the crew with wax, but he left his own open that he might hear the singing. And he had himself tied securely to the mast, and you can guess why. Then they steered for the sirens straight. And when he heard their maddening music, Ulysses strove to be free and to get to them. But the stout ropes held him tight, and his crew couldn't even hear him cry out, for they couldn't hear the siren song either, because they had wax in their ears. They rowed steadily on, and so they came safely past the strait. Now let me tell you how another man passed those same dangerous straits. And he wasn't bound at all. Neither did his crew have wax in their ears. And this is the better way. This is the way that illustrates what our text meant when it said, walk in the Spirit, and you won't do the wrong things that you're tempted to do. So this is about Orpheus. He was the master of music. He played so beautifully that it was said that even trees and stones loved to hear him. That's hard to understand. When he came to the Sirens' rocks, he took his harp and he sang. And the evil sirens sang their sweetest, but he sang still more sweetly. And the sailors had no ears for any other music but his. As they listened, the steersman steered his straightest, and the rowers pulled their stoutest. And so Orpheus and those that sailed with him came safely through. Now, boys and girls, that's a parable of our life. That'll tell you the best thing to guide you through all life. Our life has its straits to pass that are bordered with half-hidden rocks of sin, with siren voices and siren shapes, trying to trick us, trying to make us believe that sin is lovely. So many wicked things look lovely. Impurity and gluttony and lying and just being lazy, just following our own way, always looks lovely. But it's siren voices. There are half-hidden rocks there. There's a wreck there. We can drift to danger and death. First there came the stout leader Moses to mankind. And he reminded us about the commandments that God had given from Sinai, his holy commandments, which are just and true. They're meant to keep men in the straight course. And they're like the ropes of Ulysses to keep us from following evil. Their word is, thou shalt not. Don't listen, they say. Stop your ears. Shut your eyes from evil. And the commandments have saved many. But there's a better way still. The New Testament tells of Jesus, the Saviour. He keeps us free and safe by a better way. He doesn't say a lot of don'ts, but much of do. Our ears are given to hear the best, not only to be shut out against the worst. Our eyes are to see God, not just to avoid looking on evil things. If we listen to Jesus, our thoughts will be so bent on him that they'll hear no one else. If we see Jesus, nothing else will compare with him. The remedy for bad thoughts is not an empty mind barred against sin, but a mind full of the thoughts of Jesus. The best guard against doing evil is not doing nothing, but doing good. Not to keep the world out, but to let Jesus in. It's not enough to refrain from reading bad books. You must read good books. Books of Christian biography. Books about the scriptures. Books about work that can make you a blessing to the world. It's not enough to refrain from doing bad things. You must do good things. So Paul says, walk in the Spirit, and you'll not fulfill the lust of the flesh. Listen to Jesus. Look to Jesus have love in your hearts to Jesus, and the siren voices of sin will have no power upon us, and he'll bring us safe home into the harbour. Boys and girls, a Merry Christmas to you. A good, glad, Merry Christmas.